Hello, welcome to the Snooker Scene Podcast. I'm Dave Hendon. My guest this week is David Grace, a professional from Leeds, a former semi-finalist in the UK Championship. He made his Crucible debut last season. And David, not only a snooker player, but a great snooker fan. He really enjoys being a professional. He enjoys every aspect of the game. He's based at one of the great clubs in this country, the Northern Snooker Centre in Leeds. I had a real good chat with him. We were in actually a bowling alley in Barnsley, so if you hear a bit of background noise, that's what it is. But anyway, I enjoyed my chat with him, and I hope you do as well. Okay, David, so how did you get into snooker? What was your introduction to the game?
It was just pretty textbook, really. My dad had a small table that he'd had from being when he was younger, and then they bought me a small table and took to it like duck to water, really, and just obsessed with the game.
And was he into snooker as well, or was it kind of a... Because Stephen Hendry got bought a table, but his family weren't really interested. It was just like a lucky random gift. Was he already a fan of the game?
Yeah, he did like it. He wasn't like mad keen, but he likes to tell me he was office champion, so it won some job or other.
Right,
so.
Yeah. And who were the sort of... So what period was this? Like, who were the sort of top players of that? I guess Stephen Hendry, it was his era, was it?
I first played on a full-size table when I was 10, so that would have been about 95. Mid-90s, and then obviously you grow up probably like your Ronin, Mark Williams, John Higgins era.
And the question, like, it's not always easy for players to answer, is why was this a game that you took to? What is it about snooker?
I don't think I was ever good at anything else, really. I wasn't tremendous at snooker, but it's just something about the game that just kind of pulls you in and you get addicted to it.
The fascination, the kind of the challenge, is it? Because it's not a physical game, but it's, as we know, it's a mental game.
Yeah, you can see the improvements, and like there's always that temptation that the next frame might be better, or the next time you play might be a little bit better.
And how did you advance in terms of your standard? How long did it take before you thought, actually, I can play this game?
It was quite gradual, really. Like, I was lucky, like, being playing at the Northern Snooker Centre, they have all the different levels of, like, you know, so you had, like, your local junior tournaments, and then you'd win that, you'd be, like, Leeds under-18 champion, and then all of a sudden you'd play in, like, the Open event, and then people would be coming from Newcastle, like Gary Wilson, who would just blow you out of the water, you soon realise what kind of level you're at.
Yeah. Can you remember, like, the first comp you ever won? Like... And did you get a trophy?
I seem to remember we played a one-frame knockout in the Saturday morning junior club. I got to the final and I lost it on the last black.
Oh, no.
And I was absolutely devastated.
Yeah. Well, welcome to a lifetime of snooker. Yeah. Exactly, yeah. But of course, as you say, like being in Leeds, you have the Northern Snooker Centre, which is probably the best club in the country. So that's kind of a stroke of fortune almost, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it's massive. I mean, that just happened to be the first club I ever set foot in, and it turns out to be one of the best clubs in the country. I thought they were all like that.
And for those who've never been there, what makes it so sort of special?
I think just everything, really. The sheer number of tables means that you're never waiting for tables, and they're always able to have tournaments on without putting the customers off. You know, the standard of the tables, and like I say, all the tournament structure, so you've got whatever level you're coming at, you've got something that you can play in that will keep you interested.
Yeah, so it's not like, because a few clubs people go to, and it's basically, it's people just enjoying themselves. It's not, like you say, structured.
Yeah.
There's no sort of ladder to climb. You're just going in and playing with your mates, whereas you had match play, I suppose, to learn.
Yeah, straight away from the junior morning club, and then you progress through that and you start playing the bigger tournaments, and then right up to, like, you know, your English ESP tournaments.
So talk about your sort of amateur career. I mean, I've got the feeling that sort of back then it was a little bit more structured maybe than it is now, and maybe more events. And how did you sort of get on in those? I know you obviously won the English amateur eventually, but so the road to that, what was that like?
Yeah, it was funny because it was a bit... they used to have the old Challenge Tour, and I was desperate to get on that for a few years, and then all of a sudden they opened it up and it became the Pios.
Yeah.
So I was on that for a few years, but I never did any good on that.
Yeah.
It just seemed to be just going out to pontins, and like it was just really tough trying to make a breakthrough. And then, like I say, I won the English for the second time, which got me in the European, and I won that to get on the tour, and then that's when I got on the tour the first time.
So talk about, like, winning the English Amateur Championship, snooker's oldest tournament, 1916 it started. What was that like the first time? That must have felt like a breakthrough.
Yeah, that was a massive breakthrough, that. Because they used to have, I think that season actually, it was before the playoffs, and I didn't have any tournaments to play in, like, that really mattered until the English Open and the English Amateur, and they had them back-to-back weekends.
Right.
And so I managed to get to the Northern Final of the English Open, lost to Andy Lee, and then the week after, like, still high on the confidence, managed to win the English Northern.
And what did that feel like to win that? Did you think, okay,
like, I'm justified in spending all this time playing snooker, I've got somewhere? Or was it then, okay, well, this is one thing, but then I've got to make the next step and become a professional?
It's strange. I've had points in my career where I've had, like, you know, 2 or 3 years where nothing's been happening. Mm. And when I get to that point of feeling like maybe it's not going to happen, something good has always happened.
Yeah.
I won the Ponting Junior in a couple of junior tournaments 1 year when it was like that. And then the same when I won the English the first time, that was 2005. Mm. But I mean, when you just look at that trophy and you see the names on it, obviously that's a massive boost.
So the European, I mean, that's a tough tournament to win. There's a lot of players in that, and it's quite a sort of hectic schedule, a lot of matches, group matches and so on. So were there any sort of points in that where you were nearly sort of knocked out, or was it, how did you sort of play that time?
No, I did all right, actually. Yeah. I think I won my group, so went into the knockouts. I got took to a decider until the final. Oh. I managed to beat my good friend now, Craig Stedman. Yeah. He likes being reminded of that, by the way.
Yeah. And so, again, another kind of feather in your cap, but were you then thinking, okay, so I've done most of what I can do in the amateur game, turning professional? I mean, what was it like then turning professional? Because the system has changed so many times, it's actually hard, even for me, who's been involved for a long time, to keep up with it. What did you have to do to get on the tour?
Well, that was just the best feeling in the world, like finally qualifying for the tour, because I'd lost, the previous year I'd lost to Martin Gould in the playoff final.
Yeah.
So that was a chance to get on. Like I said, I'd never done any good in the playoffs.
Yeah.
So to finally like do it, and that the European is the last tournament you can possibly get on.
Okay, right.
So that got you on, I think. It was all or nothing,
Yeah.
We can come down to a decider, so obviously to win that was absolutely massive.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, to be honest, it was like a bit of a letdown in the end, because I got on, it was the olden days when there was 8 ranking events, and the world qualifiers were like February.
Yeah.
So I'd got on in the June or the July, and I was off by February, and like, oh, is this it?
Yeah.
Is that all there is?
Well, that's interesting, because I think like a lot of people associate being a snooker professional with a life of glamour and, you know, hotels and foreign travel and so on. But actually, when you start, and particularly in your time when, like you say, there weren't many tournaments, you basically just walk in with your cue the first day, don't you, and get on with it, and no one really tells you what to do or what it's all about, and you realise actually this is tough.
You just have to go figure it out for yourself, really. I mean, obviously it was the same venue as I've been playing at Pontins, so I was familiar with that. But a couple of good things in the first season, I played Jimmy White in the UK, and that was in the badminton hall at Sheffield, so that was like a next level experience.
How did you sort of feel as that year went on? As you say, by the end of it, it felt like a bit of a letdown. But what do you think, looking back, you sort of learned from it?
Just learned so much about how tough it is to win matches at professional level. Because like, you know, I think I only won two or three matches the whole season.
Mm.
Not that it's much of a season, but in 8 tournaments, I only won a couple of matches. So just find out how tough it was.
And was there sort of times where you thought, well, actually maybe I shouldn't be doing this, maybe I should be doing that? I get the feeling not with you, because you love the game so much.
Yeah. It's hard to, but the year after I dropped off was really tough. I like go back to the playoffs after finally, you know, you feel like you finally cracked it, and then like 6-7 months later you're off the tour, and you've got to go back to the playoffs, and I was doing nothing on the playoffs again. Yeah, it was like nearly 2 years before the Q school came in, and then that's when I got back on the second time.
Yeah, and by then the game had kind of changed, because Barry had took over, and it looked like things were sort of starting to happen finally, which I guess is good timing for you sort of looking to get back on.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, to be honest, when the Q school came out, as people do now, I didn't think it was the fairest system. You know, I thought it was really brutal. You know, I was lucky enough to get through the first event, but in those days there was no ranking list or anything, so if you lost that last match to get on, you had to start again the next day and win another 5 matches. Otherwise, you know, just start again.
But I suppose, oh, it's great to get back on the tour, but you can't over celebrate, because once you get back on the tour, you've then got to stay on the tour, and you've got to start to make progress. I mean, did you notice kind of like that you, or did you realise you had to raise your standard then?
Obviously, I knew from the time before that, you know, it was going to be hard to win matches, but the tour was changing. You know, there was a lot of PTC events in Sheffield, and that gives you a chance to play more matches and even nick a few wins.
Yeah.
Just find out what it's all about.
Yeah. So we're going to fast forward now to the UK Championship 2015, which you will remember fondly, in York, which is obviously quite close to where you're from. You got to the semi-finals. Yeah, some great wins. I mean, obviously the quarter-final with Martin Gould is a memorable one, because you were like 5-1 down and turned it round. I mean, just talk about the sort of the emotions of that, apart from anything else.
Yeah, again, it was like I was riding the crest of a wave, and because like almost every round from the last 16 onwards was new territory, I don't think it hit me as much, because I had time to just, I didn't have time to think about it really.
Yeah.
Um, yeah, just going through the rounds and like I regarded the last 16 as like as a personal best because the only last 16 I'd had before that was in Shanghai and like Max Selby unfortunately had to withdraw.
Yeah.
So that was obviously a new personal best, and then everything from there was a bonus really.
But how do you sort of stay grounded, because suddenly you're in uncharted territory, and even like getting to sleep after a great win, I mean, what's that like? Is it something you've had to learn? Or?
You don't really. Yeah. I mean, obviously after that the gold match, it was maybe midnight by the time we'd finished. Yeah. I was just absolutely in shock. I was doing interviews and stuff afterwards, and I just didn't know what to say because I was just properly in shock that I'd managed to turn it around.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you've got to get your head down and realise that you're playing at 1 o'clock the next day.
Yeah.
So you know, if you're kind of like you've got to be there at 12, you've got to have a practice at 11, you've got to have something to eat.
Yeah.
And like, so by the time we'd had something to eat after the, you know, in the evening, there was just no time to sleep at all. So.
Yeah. And I guess everyone around you, like your family, your friends, they're all excited for you as well. And you've got to kind of just control things a little bit and just focus on, you've got another match, like you say, the next day.
Yeah, and obviously I want to read all my texts and I want to reply to everyone and that. And you just literally don't have time
when
it's that kind of turnaround.
Yeah. So the semi-final was another kind of roller coaster ride, wasn't it? And you had a chance to force the decider, didn't you? I mean, looking back on that, what are your sort of feelings on that?
Yeah, I definitely didn't play as well as I had done earlier in the tournament, like throughout the match. But I think things were going well up until 4-2, and then he just totally changed the pace of the match. Mm. And there was a few moments looking back where I could have played my way back into it a little bit more rather than trying to play the right shots. Mm. Strange little scenarios, but he just kind of controlled it after that.
It's interesting you say that, because how hard is it for a player to not try and sort of replay the match, even like a few years on, you know, and think, if only I'd have done that? How hard is it to just put that to bed and, okay, that happened, we've got to move on to the next event?
I think because it was such a high watermark for me that I could be more than happy with where I got to.
Hmm.
That people still come up to me now and tell me about the pink I missed. I'm aware that I missed the pink, but it doesn't haunt me really. Hmm.
But also, it wasn't only a semi-final, it was the UK Championship, a massive event on the BBC, so I guess you're getting a lot of attention suddenly. Having sort of slogged away for years, suddenly there you are.
Yeah, it was just nuts overnight. I mean, I'd never even played a match on the BBC before, so to like get through to like the last, even just playing in the main arena in the last 32, and then all of a sudden I'm playing Ebden, I'm going to be on the TV table, and then I'm in the quarters of the UK, and then I'm in the semis of the UK.
Yeah. And also, like, because it's close to where you live, it's not like if you've been the Shanghai Masters, all your family would be watching on the telly, but they're all there supporting you, which must be great.
Yeah, it was fantastic, yeah. And I felt the crowd as well. The crowd were, like, warming to me, and, you know, they were just supporting me because I was local and that. Mm. So that was nice.
And also, you proved to yourself, I guess, that actually, you know, I am good at this game and I can actually do well in tournaments, but you've got to... Like you kind of knew that, but you had to kind of prove it, I guess.
Yeah, you know, you can tell people in the club, but you know, there's millions of players that are absolutely fantastic in the club, you know, but when you can actually do it on the big stage.
Yeah, we get a bit of noise off, but I like a bit of atmosphere. We are in a bowling alley, although there's no one bowling at the moment, thankfully. So I guess then you've got to move on from that, though, haven't you? You can't over-celebrate getting to the semi-final because there's another half of the season to come. How hard was it to then go back to, okay, round one in Barnsley, Wigan, wherever, and get on with the next event?
Yeah, it's different. And I mean, I'm not like a prima donna. I know that I'm not going to be on the TV table unless I'm playing a big name, really. Yeah. So you know that your bread and butter is you playing in your booths and trying to get through your qualifying matches.
Yeah.
And for the next year or so, I was quite happy with how that was going. You know, I know it's not setting you out the tie, but just win your qualifying matches, get to the venues, and you know, you can make a good living that way.
Yeah, and also like safeguard your tour place as well.
Yeah,
which is massive, and not be worrying about, okay, I'm 62 in the world, I'm 63. You know, and sort of you're on that cutoff. You've earned enough money, you're going to be on the tour.
Yeah, in that 1 week I knew that I was going to be on the tour for that year, for the last season just gone, and then I know it's going to be tough this year.
Yeah. One big difference since then, it's only 2 years ago, is the way you look, because you've lost, how much have you lost? How much weight?
Nearly 6.5 stone.
6.5 stone. And now just tell us about that, because that's an amazing effort.
Yeah, if there's anyone less likely to lose any weight, honestly, it's just unbelievable really. And we joined Slimming World in January last year. So we were getting married in April, so we wanted to lose a bit of weight for that, and we just kept it up really, and just kept going every week since.
But there's one thing to say, to lose 2 stone is great, to lose 3 stone. 6.5 stone. And to stay disciplined and not put it back on, because that's the thing that most people, people can lose weight and then they go back to their old ways. Yeah. But you've stayed disciplined.
Yeah, well, I know I have to be. We still go to the groups every week, and I know that, I miss it. When I go to China next week, I'll miss that group on the Monday, and I'll feel like I need it. I really do need it in my life. Mm. Just that it just keeps you on the level once a week, Monday night.
Mm. But to lose it, you join the Slimming World. Do you eat at all? I mean, it just seems 6.5 stone seems an incredible amount.
I eat more now than I ever have done, honestly.
But the right stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just certain things. I mean, I could go into it in more detail, but it's basically food optimising. Right. So the way you cook certain things, lean meats.
Yeah.
It's stuff that doesn't really affect your life. You can have virtually any meal you can think of if you cook it a certain way.
Okay. And do you feel it's made a difference to your game? I guess you're sort of healthier, fitter maybe, and make more energy. Is that what it is?
I must be, because I haven't noticed it as much as I thought, because it's a long process, isn't it? It happens over 18 months, but it can't hurt, can it?
Mm. We hear a lot of talk from players about various things on the tour that they're not happy with and sort of grumbles. Do you enjoy being a snooker player? I get the feeling you do. You tend not to sort of complain about things.
Yeah, I don't want to be part of the moaning brigade, right, if I'm honest. I know it's human nature to worry about things, but when I see people moaning, and they're only moaning about something that's affecting them.
Yeah.
I know there's not many people that look at it the way I do, but I've just been a snooker fan for years.
Mm.
I could read snooker scene back to front.
Yeah.
And when I was a kid.
Yeah.
So I just love the game, and I just want to see the game do well.
Yeah. So the sort of lifestyle of a snooker player, because as I say, I think if you're not involved in the game, you don't really understand. There's a lot of travelling and, airports, checking into hotels, checking out, all that sort of stuff. And you've got to manage your schedule as well, which is quite hard when there's so many tournaments. How do you sort of cope with that?
Yeah, you have to be well organised. Mm. And that's one of my strong points, really. And it does help when you know you're going to be here, you're going to be there, and you're going to have to book this hotel and do that. And it does help you keep on top of it all.
Mm. And do you like travelling? Do you enjoy going to China?
Yeah, I like seeing new places. Mm. Yeah, obviously travelling for a tall chap such as myself is not great, but I do what I can. Got my little tricks.
Okay. And what about sort of the down moments? How do you sort of cope with, like, you lose 5-4 in the first round or something? How do you cope with defeat? Is there a way of doing that, or do you sulk? I mean,
I used to just be devastated and sulk and not want to practice and everything. But since I got with my wife Gemma, it's just brilliant to just be able to go home and she's always going to be there, hopefully, touch wood.
Yeah. I suppose as well, there's so many events now that you kind of can't dwell too much on what's happened 1 week, because the next week you need to be in the right state of mind to be playing the next tour.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, if you let it snowball, you can go on a long run of losses, but conversely, you can, if you get on a good roll of winning, you can use it to your advantage as well. So.
Mm. Do you sort of get recognised? I mean, you're a snooker professional, but unless you're sort of on TV a lot, like there's even top players who could maybe walk down the high street and not get. Do you get that, and do you enjoy that?
Yeah, I don't mind. Mm. In the club, the snooker people that have seen it, the look out for me results a lot more than they used to do since the UK. And it's just funny, the day after the UK, we was out shopping in Brighouse, and an old fella came up to me in Jack Fulton's, and he was like, "Brilliant. Oh, it's you, isn't it?" And I was like, "Oh, yeah, you're all right." And then he shook my hand for about 5 minutes, people do, and he said, "Even I could have potted that."
Oh, it's nice to hear. Yeah, thanks for that. Yeah. But of course, in China, the players get treated like really like stars, don't you? I mean, that must be kind of a bit of a contrast, I think, to over here.
Yeah, it's nice. It's a strange one, China, because you go in the hotel lobby, you'll be doing an autograph every time you pass through the lobby in China. Mm. But then when you actually get to the venue, there's not that many people watching.
Yeah.
But I think it's just a different culture. I don't think it's any particular reason.
Yeah.
It's a big country. They watch it on telly.
Mm.
Maybe they're just not big live sport watchers.
Yeah. I think the tickets cost a lot of money as well.
Yeah.
And I get the feeling in China, it's a bit different to here. You can't sort of ring your boss and say, "Oh, I'm a bit ill and I can't come in," and then suddenly you're on the telly.
Yeah.
That would knock her down well, I think.
Yeah.
But do, I mean, what about sort of jet lag and things like that? Is that something that you have a problem with? And also, like food, you said about your sort of strict diet, is that compromised by travelling?
Yeah, it's tough to eat well. Because, like I say, it's quite when you're at home, it's quite a simple plan to follow a slimming world because you're cooking meals in a certain way. But when I can make a full English breakfast at home and it'd be absolutely spot on slimming world, but you have that in a pub or a breakfast in a hotel, and it's a million times worse just because of, you know, a few certain things.
So is that, so how do you therefore have to really watch what you eat, or because you know like you say, you've kept the weight off, so it's obviously you're doing something right when you're
I do make better decisions, but I also, I'm not too hard on myself. I know if I'm away, you know, I might have a gain that week, but I know that as soon as I get back on it, when I get home, you know, I can get it straight off. So it's all about not being too hard on yourself.
What's the sort of, again, like for people who don't know, what's the sort of typical day for a snooker player? So say you're playing a match at say 2 o'clock. What time do you get up? What do you do in the morning? How do you prepare for that 2 o'clock start?
Actually, I hate the afternoon starts. Okay. I'd rather play morning or night, because morning's my natural time. If I'm at home, I'll be getting up at like 6:30. Right. I'm in the club doing the tables at 7:30, and then start playing at 10. So 10 o'clock's a good start time for me. The evening one, I try and I'll get up early, and then I'll try and have a little sleep in the afternoon, and then restart everything at about 5 o'clock.
So say at 2 o'clock, so that's the time you're playing. What do you do in the morning to lead up to that match?
Sometimes go and have a practice and then go back. It's hard to know like when to eat sometimes. You know, you've got to have just enough that you're not going to be hungry, and you've got to also prepare mentally that you might not be on at 2:30 with some of the roll on roll offs. You know, you could be knocked out till 4 o'clock. So it's a hard balance to get everything right.
You played at the Crucible for the first time this year. Well, I mean, that for you, for anyone, that's great, but like you as a great snooker fan, and you presumably you've been there to watch before and so on, just to be walking out there, what was that like?
Absolutely unbelievable. Like, I didn't have time to sink in, because I qualified on maybe the Wednesday and the draw was like Thursday, and then I was back down Friday for the opening ceremony, which was unbelievable.
It's great.
I was just like, for a snooker fan, so even like, if I'd have bought a ticket for that, I would have had the best night ever. I was actually on the Crucible floor with all those legends, going to be playing there the next day. It was too much to take in at the time.
But that's the thing, a lot of players have said. I remember Ken said when he first played there, he played Steve, and he said, I was 4-0 down before I kind of realised I was in the World Championship. I was looking at Steve, was looking at the lights and everything and the Crucible. You know, you've still got to, you've got to be a pro, you've got to play the match. How long did it take to sort of settle into it?
I managed to get out of the first session 5-4, so I mean, I was delighted with that, really, because I've been 5-2 down. But looking back when I watched it, I was a bit too careful the first couple of frames. I was thinking, just get a frame on the board. I turned a couple down that I could maybe have gone for and found myself 2-0 down. You know, it's things like that that make the difference at that level.
Do you, as a player, do you have sort of any superstitions? Do you have any kind of odd routines that you can tell us about?
Not particularly. My dad's a bit superstitious. Like, I've been texting him this morning, because the last time he didn't pick balls out for me, I won my qualifying match, and then he picked balls out for me the last week, and I got beat. So he's like, not going to do it tonight.
Like, right, yeah. But you don't have like lucky pants or anything, or lucky socks or anything like that?
No, not really.
Okay, fair enough. So at this stage of your career, then, what are your sort of immediate goals? I guess as much improvement as you can, and try and win something.
Yeah, possibly. You look at, you know, some of the smaller tournaments, and they do, you know, they do look winnable, really. But there's so many players to beat. I mean, even when you're not playing a top player, I honestly think the standard has gone through the roof this season.
Yeah.
I know Ronnie doesn't think so, but like, I just look around the qualifying matches. Like, even the last couple of years, you could look around and pick a few out that you're definitely going to beat him. And I just can't see that anymore. I really think like a lot of the Chinese kids are coming through with like a next level.
Yeah.
And it's just down to the rewards, isn't it, that are on offer now. It's bringing good players like Ian Breese back into the game, who's, you know, jacked it in for a few years, but he's thinking, you know, I can make a living now.
Yeah, and also a lot of people, they'll see the result of a match, but they won't have seen the match. You can play great and lose, can't you?
Yeah.
You can play fantastically well and lose. Yeah. And I think people don't understand, like, the standard is so high down the ranks that people are knocking each other out. So it's hard to get on a run. Like, for example, when Ronnie turned pro, he sort of breezed through the qualifying when the standard at that level, when it was open, wasn't as high. That's very hard now.
Yeah. yeah, if he was coming in at the last 500 and whatever, then you would be winning the first 3 or 4 matches. But I mean, I know he was obviously an outstanding talent, but if he was coming in at the last 128, he probably still would have won.
You know what I mean? But he's a one-off, I guess. Now, of course, it's not just snooker with you. You've got this other talent for painting.
Yeah.
Well, tell us about that. When did that start?
Just at school, really. I did it up till A-levels. I think it was a B at A-level. And then I never touched it for years. And then I just decided I was going to do painting. And my first niece, when she was about 1. And everybody liked it. And then I think I did one of Neil Robertson for a charity auction. It made like £200-300, and I was like, and everybody really liked it. So I got a few people asking me if I could do them.
And where does that talent come from? I mean, is it just a natural thing that you have the hand-eye coordination? Maybe it's a little bit like snooker. You've got that brain that you can.
Yeah, I think there is comparisons where you've got to be like patient and like quite well organised.
Yeah.
And just, you know, cause a lot of it is in the organisation, the sketching out. Once it's sketched out, it's kind of painted by numbers from there. Yeah. Really.
And also, I guess it's something you can do on your own, and you keep your mind clear, and you're not maybe thinking about, oh, I'm going to wherever next week to play this match and whatever. It's not a snooker thing necessarily.
No, it actually really did help. I think I was doing it that year when I got to the semis of the UK, and I was doing a lot of painting, and it was just taking my mind off, you know, the in-between bits.
Mm. And people can buy them, can they?
They could, but I can't just lose that much time
away
on the tour at the moment. I'm having to tell people that I haven't got time to do them at the minute.
Okay, right. Sort of immediate sort of career ambition. I mean, everyone wants to be world champion. I guess why not? You know, why not have that ambition?
Yeah, I would like to win an event. I mean, you've seen in the last couple of years people winning the events for the first time, and everybody wants that moment. Mm. You know, it almost doesn't matter what tournament it is. You have that moment where you're the last man standing, you pick up that trophy and do the little lap of honour and that. I think everybody wants that.
Yeah. I already know the answer to this, but you don't regret becoming a snooker pro, do you?
No. I'm still living the dream.
Brilliant. Well, long may it continue. Thanks a lot for being on the podcast, David.
Thanks for having me.
Cheers.